almost 1 in 8 died, according to a new study. The research, which is still to be peer-reviewed, also found a higher risk of problems developing in a range of organs after hospital discharge in those younger than 70, and also in ethnic minority individuals. There's been so much talk about all these people dying from COVID-19, but death is not the only outcome that matters, said Dr. Charlotte Summers, a lecturer in intensive care medicine at the University of Cambridge, who was not involved in this new study. The idea that we have that level of increased risk in people, particularly young people, it means we've got a lot of work to do. There is no consensus on the scale and impact of long COVID, but scientists have described emerging evidence as concerning. According to recent figures provided by the Office for National Statistics, ONS, a fifth of people in England still have coronavirus symptoms 5 weeks after being infected, half of whom continue to experience problems for at least a further 12 weeks. Thanks to a better understanding of the disease and new therapies, COVID-19 hospital death rates have fallen dramatically, said study researcher Kamlesh Kunti, a professor from University of Leicester who sits on SAGE and is also a member of the independent SAGE group of experts. The findings of this new study are based on data from the Office of National Statistics and general practitioners in England. A total of 47,780 individuals who had a hospital episode between 1st of January 2020 and 31st of August 2020 with a primary diagnosis of COVID-19 were compared with a control group who did not have COVID-19. Of the 47,780 individuals who took part in the new research, 29.4% were readmitted to hospital within 140 days of discharge, and 12.3% of them died. The rate of readmission was 3.5 times greater and the death rate 7 times higher than those in the control group, the researchers found. The risk of post-discharge illness, such as respiratory conditions, diabetes, and problems with the heart, problems with liver and kidneys in COVID-19 patients was higher compared with the control group. That risk was also greater in younger and ethnic minority individuals compared with those aged 70 and above and white people. This matters. Long COVID at this level of morbidity and new disease is absolutely as important as the number of people dying, said Dr. Charlotte Summers of the University of Cambridge. Respiratory disease was diagnosed in 14,140 individuals of the COVID-19 cases, that's 29.6% of the cases following discharge, with 6,085 of the diagnoses in patients that had no history of respiratory conditions. If this percentage of people who came to hospital end up with chronic respiratory disease, Dr. Charlotte Summers said, the National Health Service has just got an enormous burden that it didn't have before.
Inside Israel.
An Israeli court just ruled that any Arabic language school or funding transport for Arab school children in the northern city of Carmiel is banned. The court says that anything otherwise would alter city's demographic balance and damage its character.
Until the years 2000, maybe even less, we had students who took the final exams in Arabic. No more ever since. Students lack the motivation. For them, the Arabic language, as I see that, is related to the Arab itself. We don't like the Arab, we don't need the Arab, and we don't want the Arab. So why do we need his language? It's totally equivalent, unfortunately.
In its decision, the court cited so-called nation-state basic law. This law was passed in 2018 and caused public uproar against it, inside Israel and outside Israel, for its apartheid nature. This move is not unprecedented, but shows Israel's racist policies on the indigenous people of the land. An Israeli court has ruled that the northern city of Carmiel is a Jewish city and that Arabic language schools or funding transport for Arab school children are liable to alter city's demographic balance and damage its character. Thus, it has blocked access to schools for Arab children in the northern city of Carmiel. The court implied that facilitating this access would incentivize Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel to move into the city, thus damaging its Jewish character. This is also true for funding the transportation of Palestinian Arab children living in the city to schools and surrounding communities. The ruling came after a lawsuit which charged that the city of Carmiel was violating its obligation to provide transportation for Arab Israeli children to local schools was dismissed out of hand. In the case, the plaintiffs sued the Carmiel municipality for 25,000 shekels, approximately $7,500, for transportation expenses for two Arab siblings, a brother and sister, who were forced to travel to a school in a nearby town because there are no Arabic language schools located in the city. For years, families and activists have demanded that the Carmiel municipality fund school transportation for Israeli Arab children and has appealed to the Israeli Education Ministry to widen the map of neighboring communities associated with Carmiel school transportation program, but obviously to no avail.
The judge ruled, actually, ruling is not surprising because the goal of establishing Jewish towns in the midst of Galilee is actually to Judaize the Galilee and prevent a majority of Arabs living there. So they don't want the Arabs to feel comfortable in the mixed towns. Okay, if they want to, you know, just go and live, pay, you know, property taxes and stuff, but they don't want them to establish, you know, Arabic symbols. Like, the language is one big symbol. So they refer to the national law, national bill, you know, that was put in state in 2018, which, you know, clearly states that the state of Israel is, you know, for the Jewish people, and they actually demoted the Arabic language from being an official language into a language with a special status. But that status was not defined really in a way so that anybody could come and refer to the national bill as they did in this ruling and base a ruling saying that, you know, Arabic is not, you know, a language and this is the Jewish state, and just, you know, use the basic law to, you know, to say no to any demand that has a flavor of nationality, such as the Arabic language. Like in Carmiel, here in Nazareth Elite, or as recently changed, the city, his name was changed to Nof HaGalil, we have a long struggle here for many years to establish an Arabic school in the city of Nof HaGalil. Where at least, you know, according to the Ministry of Education, there's about 40% of children in this city between the ages 5 and 19 that are Arab in the city, okay? And the population of the Arabs in this city is about 30%. So far, we only have kindergartens, and starting, you know, from first grade through the 12th grade, we have to go and find solutions outside the city with a, you know, an ongoing refusal. So we have been in the court since 2013. The political struggle actually started way before, like at least 15 years before. We are actually awaiting the Supreme Court's ruling on our you know, case. The reason, in my opinion, and you know, my many others who are in this struggle with me, that the municipality and actually the Ministry of Education refused our request to establish an Arab school, is actually to protect and preserve the Jewish, the Jewish status in the city, or the Jewish ethos. And so for them, we are only residents. We should not have any nationality rights. They don't want us to establish a community, because if you establish a school, that means you establish a community. You know, my son will have other kids in his age living in the neighborhood, and then there will be relations between me and that child's parents, and then you will have actually a living community that grows and feels at home, more at home in the city, as opposed to just using it as like a hotel, because we all work outside, study outside, and then just come and sleep here. So there's no real community life here. So they don't want us to feel at home here. And you know, recently they ran, people started demonstrating in front of the city municipality. Like first they ask for a school, and then they will ask for a mosque. Presenting actually the fact that they don't want any symbol of Arab, the Arab culture, whether it is Muslim or Christian or the language, inside the city.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. Raymond says Israel continues to steal Palestinian land on which to build illegal settlements, in the opinion of almost every nation on earth. When Israel shows its disregard for human rights and ignoring international law, it gets criticized. Citizen Jane says Israel invokes nation-state law in denying transport to Palestinian school children in Galilee. Damascus Frey said Netanyahu literally said, according to the basic nationality law we passed, Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people, and only it.
Many people say that we should forget about 48 and we should just start a new chapter. But what happened in 48, namely the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, never stopped ever since 48. And therefore, we have to continue to remind ourselves that this ethnic cleansing and apartheid system is still around, and nothing changed ever since 48. And Carmiel is just an example for what we all know. I mean, those who are sensitive enough for human rights know that being a Palestinian or an Israeli Arab in Israel means to be a second-class citizen. Being a Jew means to be a first-class citizen.
The court based its ruling on the so-called nation-state basic law. This law was passed in 2018 and caused public uproar against it, inside Israel and outside Israel, for its apartheid nature. On July 19, 2018, the Israeli Knesset voted 62-55 to approve the Jewish Nation State Basic Law that constitutionally enshrines Jewish supremacy and the identity of Israel as the nation state of the Jewish people. This law, which has distinct apartheid characteristics, guarantees the ethnic religious character of Israel as exclusively Jewish and entrenches the privileges enjoyed by Jewish citizens, while simultaneously anchoring discrimination against the Israeli Arab minorities and legitimizing exclusion, racism, and systematic inequality. Carmiel was one of several cities and towns strategically established starting in the mid-1960s as part of an Israeli initiative to attempt to expand the Jewish presence in the Galilee, where Arabs made up most of the population. Carmiel is one of more than 700 communities the state has built for the Jewish population since Israel's founding, compared with none built for the Arab population. In March 1976, the Israeli military began confiscating and expanding several Jewish towns in the area. This was met by confrontations, including general strikes and street battles. This is known as Land Day and is commemorated every year in March.
These towns that were established in the Galilee, and starting in the 50s, 60s, and on, had a clear goal, which is to Judaize the Galilee, okay, which means establishing Jewish settlements there in the midst of the Arab towns to prevent Arabic continuous territory, okay? So the language of Arabic is, you know, part of, you know, it's part of it's a national representation. It is, it represents the language, it represents the culture. So for them, it contradicts the goal, which is to have a Jewish-only settlement. Another aspect of this struggle is the refusal to accept that we have been here forever, okay, and that that these towns like Nofa Galil, Carmiel, Afula were all established on confiscated Arab land. So like Palestinians living in Nazareth, in Kareni, in Ain Mahel, in Iksal, all these surrounding Arab towns, they had all, like, their lands were lost by the confiscation in order to establish the city, Nofa Galil. So where, like, the official language of the municipality is that we are coming here to attain a quality of life, because there's no quality of life in neighboring cities. Well, this is obviously a sarcastic, you know, way of looking at things, because the city of Nazareth, which has double the population of Nofa Galil, is sitting on only 14 square kilometers, whereas Nofa Galil, which is half, and all on confiscated land established in 1957, is residing on at least 33 square kilometers. So it's very normal that people living in high density will want to, you know, emigrate and move to a town which is, you know, more offering more, you know, places to live in.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. David says that Israel allocated 99.7% of public land in the occupied West Bank to Israeli settlers, illegal under international law. Only 0.24% went to the Palestinians. The nation-state law embedded apartheid. Have a look at it. The simple truth is that people had to be driven off their land. Noga says Netanyahu, the nation-state lawman who made Arabic not an official language and defined only Jewish communal rights in Israel, tells the Likud, "I believe in Jabotinsky's vision that every Israeli citizen should enjoy all rights. We appeal to Arab citizens, this time vote for us." Kieran says the nation-state law turns non-Jews in Israel into second-class citizens. In the occupied territories, Palestinians are under military law, while settlers are under Israeli civil law. Apartheid in action.
Well, this is what happens when you have the concept of a settler nation. A settler nation is a nation that basically invalidates the people of the land that they wish to settle. It's ethnic cleansing. The way that, you know, we can see that whatever the Israelis have done, or the Zionists really from the very earliest start, because, you know, my grandfather was a Zionist doctor who was kicked out of being the Zionist doctor of Palestine in Jerusalem in 1911 because he said, well, I'm a doctor, I take care of Arabs, and they said no, and they sent him away. And that's why he came to the United States. So the fact is that this is a country which has its basis in the deprivation of health, life, land, to the people, and the Ontario was a beautiful place which had all kinds of gardens and parks, and it was beautiful before the Israelis took it over. But they did it as a cat's paw on the way, I think, to the northern part because it was established in 1964. In 1967 came the war where the Israelis captured Golan.
Although Arabs now constitute around 6% of Carmel's population, that is around 2,760 people, there is still no Arabic language school inside the city. As such, Arab Israeli parents are forced to send their children to various schools in the area. According to the Education Ministry, it doesn't take part in school organization, just the funding and content of what's being learned. It says that the money goes to municipalities and that they use it for transportation and schools. The ministry says the funding is sufficient. However, the municipalities say the funding is not. Many of them are accused of pocketing the money. This dilemma has been faced by the Arab population for decades now. It seems that Israel wants to further isolate the Arabs. At least, that is how they feel. Through decades of neglect and now political isolation, the conditions might be just getting worse. Here is the news making the press in Israel. The Jerusalem Post. For the first time since the inception of Israel, the Jewish population dropped below 74%, according to the Israeli Immigration Policy Center, IPC, who cited data from Israel's Central Bureau of Statistics. Also this year, the number of Jewish immigrants hit a record low of 33.8% of the total number of new immigrants, according to the IPC. The Times of Israel. Jewish extremists violently attack Arab car amid riots over settlers' death. Following overnight protests in occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds over the death of 16-year-old Hilltop youth Ahuvia Sandak, who was killed in a car crash during a police chase after allegedly hurling stones at Palestinians last month, footage emerged of an extremist mob throwing rocks and other objects towards a vehicle driven by Arabs in the city, as well as attempting to open the car's door to attack the occupants. Ynet News. Prosecutors have released an amended indictment against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, removing any mention of his family in a corruption charge in which he is accused of trading favors with a powerful media mogul. Netanyahu has been charged with fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes in three corruption cases. Haaretz. Anti-corruption demonstrations across Israel continue into their 28th week, with two teens arrested for alleged attack in northern Israel. Israel police detained anti-government protesters outside the prime minister's official residence in occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds amid demonstrations across Israel, which have entered their 28th week. The remaining protesters, who numbered around 100, were removed from the street leading to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's residence and relocated.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Are the wolves of Yellowstone National Park in the United States the first line of defense against the terrible disease that preys on herds of wildlife? That's the question for a research project underway in the park, and preliminary results suggest that the answer is yes. Researchers are studying what is known as the predator cleansing effect, which occurs when a predator sustains the health of a prey population by killing the sickest animals. If the idea holds, it could mean that wolves have a role to play in limiting the spread of chronic wasting diseases, which is infecting deer and similar animals. Stay with us for an interesting article written by Jim Robbins under the heading Using Wolves as First Responders Against a Deadly Brain Disease. Stay with us for more of Jim Robbins's article. There is no management tool that is effective for controlling the disease, said Ellen Brandel, a doctoral student in wildlife ecology at Pennsylvania State University who is leading the project, adding that there is no vaccine. Can predators potentially be the solution? Many biologists and conservationists say that more research would strengthen the case that reintroducing more wolves in certain parts could help manage wildlife diseases, although the idea is sure to face pushback from hunters, ranchers, and others concerned about competition from wolves. Chronic wasting disease, a contagious neurological disease, is so unusual that some experts call it a disease from outer space. First discovered among wild deer in 1981, it leads to deterioration of brain tissue in cervids. Mostly deer, but also elk, moose, and caribou, with symptoms such as listlessness, drooling, staggering, emaciation, and death. It is caused by an abnormal version of a cell protein called a prion, which functions very differently than bacteria or viruses. The disease has spread across wild cervid populations and is now found in 26 states, and several Canadian provinces, as well as Scandinavia. The disease is part of a group called transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, the most famous of which is bovine spongiform encephalopathy, also known as mad cow disease. Mad cow in humans causes a variant of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and there was an outbreak among people in the 1990s in Britain from eating tainted meat. Cooking does not kill the prions, and experts fear that chronic wasting disease could spread to humans who hunt and consume deer or other animals that are infected with the disease. The disease has infected many deer herds in Wyoming and is spread to Montana in 2017. Both states are adjacent to Yellowstone National Park, so experts are concerned that the deadly disease could soon make its way into the park's vast herds of elk and deer. Unless perhaps the park's 10 packs of wolves, which altogether contain about 100 individuals, preyed on and consumed diseased animals that were easier to pick off because of their illness. The disease does not appear to infect wolves. Wolves have really been touted as the best type of animal to remove infected deer because they are cursorial. They chase their prey and they look for the weak ones, said Ellen Brandle. By this logic, diseased deer and other animals would be the most likely to be eliminated by wolves. Preliminary results in Yellowstone National Park have shown that wolves can delay outbreaks of chronic wasting disease in their prey species and can decrease outbreak size. There is little published research on predator cleansing, and this study aims to add support for the use of predators to manage disease. A prime concern about the spread of chronic wasting disease in the Yellowstone National Park region is the fact that Wyoming maintains 22 state-sponsored feeding grounds that concentrate large numbers of elk unnaturally in the Yellowstone region. And just south of Grand Teton National Park lies the National Elk Refuge, where thousands of animals displaced by cattle ranchers are fed each winter to satisfy elk hunters and tourists. Many wildlife biologists say concentrating the animals in such small areas is a recipe for the rapid spread of chronic wasting disease. When cases of the disease among deer range from 5 to 50% in Wisconsin and Colorado, those states were considered hotspots. But if the disease gets into the game farms like the ones in Wyoming, prevalence rates skyrocket to 90 or even 100%, said Mark Zabel, associate director of the Prion Research Center at Colorado State University. Prions are especially deadly. Unlike bacteria and viruses, prions can persist in soil for 10 years or more and endure on vegetation. Even if a herd dies out or is culled, new animals moving in can become infected. The origin of the disease is unknown. Andrew P. Dobson, a professor of ecology and epidemiology at Princeton University who has studied predator cleansing, believes the illness is largely the result of ecosystems with too few predators and scavengers. He speculates that the disease may have come from deer living in proximity to sheep in Colorado or Wyoming, where it was first identified. Sheep have carried scrapie, effectively mad cow disease for sheep, for centuries. Dr. Dobson has theorized that after a contaminated animal died, it may have lain on the ground for a while, and in the absence of predators and scavengers, which would usually clean up carcasses, elk and deer must have calcium, he said, and they may have eaten the bones of a contaminated animal and spread the disease. The absence of wolves throughout much of the West may also have allowed the disease to take off. Taking the sick and weak removes chronic wasting disease from the population, because any animal showing any signs of it will get killed and eaten by the wolves, Dr. Dobson said. The rest of the carcass gets cleaned up by the coyotes, the bald eagles, ravens, and bears. Without predators and scavengers on the landscape, animal components last much longer, and that can definitely have an impact on the spread of the disease, according to Ellen Brandel. Restoring the population of predators in national parks and wildlands would go a long way towards healthier ecosystems with less disease, according to Dr. Dobson. Ken McDonald, chief of the Wildlife Division of Montana's Fish, Wildlife and Parks, expressed doubts that wolves would prevent chronic wasting disease. Wolves help remove sick animals, but animals don't get visibly ill for about 2 years, he said. So they are carriers and spreaders, but don't get the classic symptoms. Mr. McDonald said that maintaining a large enough wolf population outside of Yellowstone National Park to control chronic wasting disease would require so many wolves that it would be socially unacceptable, especially to ranchers and hunters. The state's approach to controlling the disease, he said, is to increase the number of deer that can be killed in places where the disease is growing. Ellen Brandel, however, said that wolves may detect the disease long before it becomes apparent to people, through smell or a slight change in the movement of prey, which could be beneficial.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The reason why the Islamic Republic is opposed to negotiating with the U.S.
This is part of a televised speech delivered on July 31st, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
The reason why I say that we will not negotiate with the U.S. is that it is pointless. Of course, they will benefit from negotiations. The poor thing, the old man who holds office in the U.S., seems to have made promotional use of negotiating with North Korea. He wants to take advantage of these negotiations either for electoral or non-electoral purposes. In any case, he has personal interests, but beyond these matters, the U.S. political system claims to be pursuing vital issues in the case of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In other words, they say that we should forsake our defense capabilities and our regional and national power. Well, this is not possible. an honorable person who is interested in preserving the country's interests will not give in to these demands. This is what negotiation means. This is the reason why I am against negotiating with the U.S. Otherwise, we will negotiate with the entire world except for the U.S. and the fake Zionist regime.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
We are having relations, negotiating, and interacting with others, and we have no problem with it. This is America's problem with us. So this is another point. Sanctions are definitely curable, but the cure is not to retreat. So what is the cure? The cure for sanctions is only and solely reliance on national capabilities. We should preserve every capability that we have in this respect.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Trump's second impeachment satisfies his natural critics, but his enraged petty bourgeois movement is here to stay, says M.K. Behadra Kumar Ryder in an article published under the heading Trumpism Will Haunt America. Stay tuned for the details, please. My crown I am, but still my griefs are mine. You may my glories and my state depose, but not my griefs. Still I am king of those. King Richard in William Shakespeare's Richard II. For the outside world, Trump impeachment can only appear as a kangaroo trial. A better way for the American lawmakers could have been to pass a law that the U.S. shall never ever promote color revolution abroad or at home. The U.S. has damaged so many countries by inciting their people to besiege established governments and force them to capitulate, to drag them into America's orbit. Are they to be called insurrections? On top of it, Joe Biden is reportedly all set to reward one of the U.S. most successful promoters of insurrections abroad in modern times, by appointing her as the new the Undersecretary of the State for Political Affairs in his administration, Victoria Nuland. Nuland was photographed distributing sandwiches to the insurrectionist campaign in tents on a Kiev city square in the winter of 2013 to 2014. And she was caught on tape abusing the European Union for impeding her project. All that doesn't seem to perturb Biden or House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. What rank hypocrisy. This ongoing project to impeach President Donald Trump for a second time in a little over a year is farcical. This will be the first time in the 231-year history of the United States of America that a president has been impeached twice in his term. What happened in Washington, D.C. on January 6th was by no means an insurrection. Of course, U.S. citizens were behind the Capitol building siege, but the parallel ends there. There was no way they could have usurped power in America. In fact, even the vandalism was entirely due to the ineptitude of the security personnel deployed there. The British Broadcasting Corporation carried a factual analytical report on what Trump said at the Save America rally organized to challenge the election result near the White House. The explosive quotes are as follows. We won this election, and we won it by a landslide. We will stop this steal. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. If you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. We are going to the Capitol. Were they so very incendiary as to destroy the U.S. political system? Can Trump be removed from office or banned from politics for saying the above? The media sought the opinion of an eminent American legal scholar and professor of law at the University of Baltimore, Garrett Epps. He concluded, "In the end, I think it's a jury question. In the best case scenario, the jury should be the American people. In the proposed impeachment, on the other hand, this case can be dismissed by the 100-member U.S. Senate body, which will sit as a jury presided over by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The outcome of that trial will be known only after Biden's inauguration." The Democrats dearly hope that unlike a year ago when the Republican vote rallied solidly behind Trump, this time around the political mood may change now that he is out of power. In the House of Representatives on Wednesday, 10 Republican members broke ranks to support the impeachment resolution. Liz Cheney, the third-ranking Republican in the House and daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, was the most notable defection. Reports suggest there might be similar happenings during the impeachment on the Senate floor. Axios reports that even Majority Leader Mitch McConnell reserves judgment until the trial is concluded. In reality, what is on trial is Trumpism. The odds are stacked against Trump. He hasn't been silenced from the omnipotent social media, including his pet Twitter account. But public opinion polling suggests that he still has a significant well of support within his party. The Democrats, who fear that Trump will rise like a phoenix from the ashes in 2024, are hoping to deliver a lasting knockout to him, banishing him from America's public life, stripping him of his right to contest elections in the future. This is the real agenda of the political game playing out in Capitol Hill. What happened to American exceptionalism? In the most recent years, many other Western democracies have faced a quandary of the alienated public being drawn toward the heady cocktail of populism and nationalism of the sort Trump patent. In Germany, France, Spain, Italy, Austria, Sweden, Finland, Estonia, Poland, Hungary, Slovenia, and Greece. Indeed, nationalism has been a recurring feature across Europe's political spectrum, and there has been a recent boom in voter support for right-wing and populist parties out of anger and frustration with the political establishment over perceived dilution of national identity, economic deprivation and inequality, etc. But Europe preferred to take the democratic route to meet the challenge. Germany is a case in point. Chancellor Angela Merkel didn't panic, and the latest poll by the Kantar Research Institute suggests that, in just a year, the far-right populist Alternative for Germany has dropped from first to third position in Eastern Germany, the party's long-time stronghold. On the other hand, the far-right has become the new normal, the ruling party in Austria, Poland, and Hungary. Fundamentally, if the European option is not open to the US, that is because of its skewed democracy, where politics is disconnected from the masses and is conducted by cabals within the two parties' establishments. Herein lies the danger. What is the guarantee that another Trump will not arise from outside the cabals that preside over politics in America and reaches out to the people directly? The fact of the matter is that Trump's support base remains the envy of any American politician. 70 million Americans voted for him last November. That massive support base will feel further disenfranchised or disempowered by what the cabals are perpetrating on the Capitol Hill. The concentration and centralization of capital in America have thrown the petit bourgeois into the ranks of the increasingly immersorated working class, but it continues to defy not only elimination but also neat categorization into proletariat. The values the petit bourgeois represents of entrepreneurship at the grassroots level, self-help, individualism, family, and careful husbanding of resources are such that despite being buffeted by recessions, loss of jobs and mounting bankruptcies, It continues to provide a stereotype model of past virtues. This class is progressive only in a limited sense. Make no mistake, this class is there to stay in the U.S., and if the post-pandemic economic recovery does not go brilliantly well or is mismanaged, its ranks will swell further. That is going to be Biden's real challenge, even if Pelosi manages to dispatch Trump into the political wilderness.
Around the World with Reporters.
Quds, the axis of Muslims' unity. This is the theme of the International Webinar of Parliaments Supporting Palestine. Organized by Iran's parliament, the event was attended by parliament speakers and deputy speakers from Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Indonesia, and other Muslim countries, as well as representatives of Palestine's resistance movements to express their solidarity with Palestinians in their resistance against Israel's occupation. Delegates condemned Sudan, the UAE, and Bahrain for their normalization of ties with Israel, calling it a betrayal to the Muslim community.
It's a bitter tragedy to see that Palestinians' houses are demolished on a daily basis. 2 million Palestinians in Gaza are living in a prison-like area, and 5 million members of the Palestinian diaspora are not given their legitimate right to return to their homeland. What's even more tragic is that some Muslim countries have given the seal of approval to Israel's crimes by establishing political and economic ties with the occupying regime.
We call on the parliaments of all Muslim and Arab countries to take serious measures against the Israeli occupation of Palestine, and especially the unwelcome deal of the century that seeks to change the identity of Palestinians and their land.
The Arab-Israeli normalization came as part of outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump's so-called deal of the century. The plan, which triggered a storm of condemnations from Palestinians, refers to Jerusalem as Israel's undivided capital and recognizes Israeli sovereignty over large parts of the West Bank. While the controversial deal was championed by Trump, observers say the incoming U.S. administration is not likely to change course on Palestine.
For me as a Palestinian and the previous experience of all American presidents, they are, and especially Biden, he's having a big heritage of literature to support the security of Israelis, and he did nothing when he was the vice president during Obama's time for the Palestinian, except that speech and rhetorics, and we have gained nothing.
Palestinian ambassador to Iran says resistance remains the only way ahead of his people against Israel's occupation, since he believes that the path of dialogue does not work with Israel.
We have to unite our forces to be strong front, and all the Arabs and Islamic world will stand behind us. No other way, because they have proved always that they are not loyal to negotiations or to any other settlement with them.
Although the Arab-Israeli normalization infuriated the Muslim world, commentators say it should not come as a surprise, and it's only a revelation of their long-existing covert ties. This is why they believe the move will not lead to a seismic shift in regional power equations.
Delegates at the webinar underlined that Palestine remains the top priority and the innermost issue of the Muslim world, adding that Israel and its Western supporters have spared no effort in derailing that priority. They called on Muslim countries to stay united, as they believe this is the main counterforce against Israel's expansionist agenda. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
...2021 has so far been miserable for millions of business people and their staff across the 27-country European Union. Lots of outlets are being forced to close their doors to prevent the spread of COVID-19, with only essential retailers allowed to remain open.
You see that we have